Welcome to Baltimore Internet Radio. I'm Dave Custy, your host for the Local Issues series. Today, my guest is Steve Everly, the Regional Director of the Ignatian Volunteer Corps in Baltimore. In his role, Steve oversees the 20-year-old Baltimore nonprofit organization that matches seasonal professionals with charities seeking skilled volunteers. A graduate of DeSales University in Center Valley, Pennsylvania, Steve began his career in West Baltimore by volunteering with AmeriCorps through the Capuchin Franciscan Volunteer Corps, where he worked in community organizing. After spending time as a case manager for adults with developmental disabilities with St. Peter's Adult Learning Center in Southwest Baltimore, Steve enrolled in Loyola University Maryland's Masters of Arts program in pastoral and spiritual care. Steve served as area director for the Jesuit Volunteer Corps East before moving back to the Philadelphia area in 2008 to work in service learning and higher education. He returned to Baltimore, the city he loves, in 2013 to work with the Ignatian Volunteer Corps. Steve lives in Fells Point, which is right down the road from here. And welcome to Baltimore Internet Radio, Steve.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. Give me a little short bio.
Well, I guess I could tell you how I came to Baltimore and how I came into this line of work. So when I was choosing colleges, I knew I wanted to major in television and film because I watched a lot of local news and I was drawn to the stories I saw on the local news. And so I enrolled at DeSales University as a television and film major and pretty quickly realized that even though I was kind of a techie, handy guy with cameras and editing equipment, that didn't really seem to be where my passion was. And I found myself more and more drawn to the stories of justice and kind of investigative journalism. And then I took a political science class called Welfare that looked at welfare reform and inequalities in school systems. And something just clicked, and I realized that what I was drawn to was social justice and making a change in the world, and not necessarily through the television lens. So I switched majors to political science and read all sorts of books and had all sorts of theoretical knowledge of systems and structures in urban environments, but I didn't actually live in one. So when I was trying to figure out what to do after college, the idea of AmeriCorps came up a couple times from classmates and professors, and I looked into it, and I found this program, the Capuchin Volunteer Corps, which was affiliated with AmeriCorps, and it seemed like a good fit for me. So I joined and moved to West Baltimore. I lived in the Franklin Square neighborhood at Fulton and Fayette for a year, and worked as a community organizer. And
okay, well, let's stop there just a second.
Sure.
How did you find it to be Baltimore? How did you why West Baltimore?
Oh, I would. It was the type of work. So the way
you're still in Philadelphia, right?
Right, I was still in Philadelphia. So the Capuchin Volunteer Corps was located in Baltimore and Washington D.C., and I was presented with about 10 different options of possible jobs. I really didn't know anything about Baltimore or Washington D.C. beyond kind of what general information is out there. Mm-hmm. But it was the community organizing position that was advertised here in Baltimore that was the one that really drew me. I came down in January of 2001 for a day of interview, 2 days of interviews, one in Washington, D.C. and one in Baltimore. And I really fell in love with the community within the parish where I'd be working, and just the job sounded right up my alley. It was organizing neighborhood events, bringing people together for a neighborhood cleanup, or organizing people to advocate for better pedestrian access, cleaner, safer neighborhoods, and then some of the other positions that I was looking at were more direct service. So working in a hospital or working in a classroom or running after-school programs, and that wasn't really what I was looking for. So so I chose this position in Baltimore, and
So how did you find this position?
It was the position
you're in right now, right? You're talking about.
Yeah. Well, I moved away to Philadelphia for 5 years to help take care of some family members who were sick, and I knew that I wanted to come back to Baltimore, and So I started searching and searching and searching, and I came through this position through a nice network that I didn't even know existed. I walked into a meeting in Camden, New Jersey, to talk about how the organization I was working for could help with Hurricane Sandy recovery. And sitting in the room was the fellow who's now my direct supervisor, who turns out worked with a couple other people I used to work with. And at the end of the meeting, where we really seemed to click, I pulled him aside on our way out to the cars. And I said, hey, super secret, but I'm planning to leave my job and move to Baltimore June 30th. And you seem like the kind of guy who knows the kind of people that I'd like to work for. Could I give you my resume? And he said, sure. I think there might be something available. And and what's funny is the position that was available was the Northern Virginia counterpart to my position. So regional director for the Northern Virginia office of the Ignatian Volunteer Corps. And I thought, okay, like I could live in Baltimore and work in Northern Virginia. That doesn't seem too awful. And so I put my best foot forward and they set up an interview time. They asked me what time slot I wanted. I chose the 8:30 in the morning time slot to prove that the commute wasn't going to be a problem for me. And
what was the other choice?
11.
And you chose 8:30.
I did. Oh, yeah. I wanted to make sure that they knew.
Big bravura, huh?
Yeah. And it was tough because it was a wonderful interview. There's the people I met were wonderful. I just knew that this was the job I wanted. But as I was driving back, I thought, oh gosh, there's no way I could do this. You know, maybe I could telecommute, maybe I could use Skype, but you know, as any good organizer knows, you really have to be on the ground.
Yeah.
And I had relationships in Baltimore. I did not have relationships in Northern Virginia, but I pressed forward, with a great deal of hope. And I had the interview with the executive director in Washington, D.C. and left that interview feeling like I had really nailed it and was excited. And then took the MARC train back up to Baltimore and then waited for the Charm City Circulator and thought, oh, this is so far away. And the next day, the executive director called to say that they had made their decision and that I was a very, very great applicant, but that all things being equal, they were offering the job to someone from Northern Virginia who had these relationships. And and I was pretty crushed, but I feel like I held it together pretty well. And I said, you know, I knew that was a liability, and it really sounds like you made the right decision. And she said, well, I'm so glad to hear you say that, because here's where it's going to get a little weird. You might want to sit down, but our Baltimore regional director has just announced that she's being transferred up to Massachusetts. So how would you like to be the Baltimore regional director?
And then did you have to hold yourself down on the chair?
I really did. I love Baltimore.
I don't know. Let me think about it.
No, it was an immediate yes. And as an added perk, the Ignatian Volunteer Corps is located in the same building as the Jesuit Volunteer Corps for whom I worked 5 years prior.
Conveniently located.
I am working exactly two floors down from the desk I once worked at once upon a time. And it's been great to come back.
What was it like that first day, the first started the job?
From a professional perspective, I had a great transition opportunity. I came in, and my first day was July 1st, but the woman who I was taking over for invited me in. I met with her a couple times a week for June. So I really feel like I was handed a well-stocked portfolio to take over. In some ways, the job is very similar to jobs I've been doing before. I knew I had to reach out to the executive directors of nonprofits to find out what their needs were and how the Ignatian Volunteer Corps either is partnering with them or could partner with them. I knew to reach out to all the volunteers and sit down and try and get a cup of coffee or lunch and hear about their story. I knew how to establish all those relationships. But it was different in that I'm 100% of the regional staff, and I was coming out of a higher education environment where I had an administrative assistant.
So you had to get your own coffee there.
Yeah, I had to get my own coffee. had to figure out how the printer and fax machine worked, and you know, if I needed to stick labels on something, I didn't have a sophomore that I could hand it over to and say, you know, here's your work study project. I had to stick the labels. But from a kind of from a personal perspective, coming back to Baltimore after 5 years away, I was amazed at what had changed and what had stayed the same. The things that had changed were well, Harbor East, that wasn't a thing when I left Baltimore and to come back and see this gorgeous neighborhood. But what I always, what I used to say about Baltimore when I was preparing to move and I was so heartbroken that I was moving, I said, you know, Baltimore seemed like the kind of city that you, you could never get lost in because someone would always notice that you were missing. And, so as I headed for work, I saw the same lady that works at the library that I used to see going to work the time I was there. The same guy is behind the deli counter at Eddie's Market where I get my smoked Gouda sandwich. And that was really comforting.
Yeah, that's great. It's the familiar things in life. You know? You offered your services to nonprofits and such. So why don't you go into what that is, the Ignatian Volunteer Corps?
So as you read in the bio, we recruit seasoned professionals, a.k.a. retired or semi-retired folks, and we match them with charities who are looking for skilled volunteers. We support the volunteers throughout the year through a number of monthly meetings. We're a faith-based organization, so we have faith-sharing meetings. We have a book club. I like to say that we're the least ambitious book club in the United States. We pick one book and read it for the whole year. But it works. It really gets us each month we get to dive into a different chapter. And then we do, you know, peer development, and I can talk a little bit more about that in a minute. But the way it works is we reach out to nonprofits, places like Catholic Charities, or which have numerous sites throughout the city, or secular community organizations like Hamden Family Center, who are bringing kids in for after school programs, and we then recruit retirees who've got a specialty, who are looking to give back and looking to have a little consistency, and we match them together through job descriptions. And so, for example, at Hamden Family Center, which is a very small staff, they were looking to become a fuel fund site so that people could, in addition to coming in for after-school programs or music lessons, if people in the neighborhood were in danger of having their power shut off, they could drop into Hamden Family Center and they'd be able to help them get their power turned back on. But that's a lot of work to do for a small staffed place. Sure. And it just so happens we have a volunteer who has a background in the federal government who has worked with fuel funding before. And so she came on board and she worked with them 2 days a week and she spent most of last year getting all the paperwork together to establish them as a fuel fund site, and this year has been has implemented that, and so people are coming in.
Let's talk about how you go about this. Now, first off, how do you find the charities and such? How does that happen?
Well, the sad story is there's no shortage of need in Baltimore. Right. So we have an application where conception begins. Is the agencies typically find us out? Our reputation precedes us a bit.
To start at, yeah.
Yeah, and it's all word of mouth for the most part. You know, we have a volunteer at an organization, and the organization is thrilled with the work they do, and then they tell their friends. And
it goes hand in hand what you said about Baltimore and that the people know you're about and all that. You know, it's a big city. It's a small town.
Yeah. Oh, we've had some of our partners recommend their friends to become Ignatian volunteers. So they usually contact us. Sometimes I do some outreach if I see that there's an area that we're not serving in. For example, this week, just looking through our list, I've gotten some requests from volunteers to look into hospice work. So I'm reaching out to some hospices to see if they could use an Ignatian volunteer. But for the most part, they contact us. I sit down with them, conduct a site visit, learn more about the organization. Our requirements are that the organization serve the needs of people who are poor and or marginalized. Mm-hmm. And so if they do that and they submit their application, which is fairly straightforward, as well as a job description, I like to say submit as many job descriptions as you like. We have one potential partner that submitted 9 job descriptions. Doesn't mean that they need 9 volunteers, but, you know, they're in an old building.
Right.
They could use someone who's a handy worker. They could use someone to staff their social media page. They could use someone to write for their development office. And that's helpful when they cast that wide net, that then I can take that net out into the community and see who from our volunteer base would be a good fit for that organization.
Well, that's my next question. Your volunteer base, where does that come from? How do you get to be a volunteer too?
We advertise a lot through word of mouth. I'd say, again, that's our big push. But we advertise in the Catholic Review. We advertised on WYPR this year. We take out ads in alumni newsletters for Catholic high schools in Baltimore. Person contacts me, and then what we usually do is we have a couple information sessions that are a little formal. They're an hour long, and we invite everyone who's interested for that year, that class, to come on out to the information session, where I and two current volunteers welcome them, and I give the kind of the 50,000-foot view of IVC and our history, and then the volunteers are there to answer questions about the day-to-day life of an Ignatian volunteer. We have an application for people interested. Mm-hmm. It's not a difficult application, but it's a very self-reflective application. It's meant to provoke thought. It's meant to help people discern, you know, why do they want to do this? What skills do they have to offer? It's helpful for later down the road when we're placing them in a potential mm-hmm. volunteer placement, that they've already had some time to reflect on what they have to give. Then there's an interview process. We match every volunteer up with what we call a spiritual reflector, who's a companion for them throughout the year. So we have a bank of spiritual reflectors. So I usually kick the interview over to one of them because it can't be the Steve show all the time. And and then once they move through the interview, then we begin the placement process of helping to match them with a partner.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. As you just mentioned, the spiritual reflector, you are faith-based, and that faith is Catholicism, right?
Yes.
So how much of a role does that play in, and is it, not to be that it's a hindrance or whatever like mm-hmm. that, but we're talking about that is faith-based.
Right, yeah. So we're the Ignatian Volunteer Corps, so we're rooted in Ignatian spirituality, and what that means is St. Ignatius, he founded the Jesuit order. They're the order behind Loyola University and Cristo Rey
where
here
we
in Baltimore.
Went to.
Yes.
Go Greyhounds.
And yes. And Pope Francis, who's quite the celebrity these days, is a Jesuit. So what Ignatian spirituality means is it's the spirituality of St. Ignatius who often said that you could find God in all things. That everything in this world is a gift given to us by God to help us learn more about who God is. And for people who believe that, it's very easy to find God in a flower or a rainbow or a sunrise. It can be a lot more difficult to find God in the inner city or find God in the wake of the riots. And right. So Ignatian spirituality, when people come into our program, what we're doing is not trying to convert them to any kind of brand of thought or proselytize, but people who come into our program are open to the idea that gifts from God can be found in the world, mm-hmm. in the light and the dark, and our program is designed to help them reflect on that and identify that in their own life.
But like you say, don't proselytize. You don't
no
force yourself on people in terms of their faith and such.
No, and it's not all of our volunteers are Catholic.
I'm just being, and the pun is intended, the devil's advocate here.
Right.
So, you know, I'm just to make it clear to people when they come in, you don't have to be Catholic.
No.
And you don't have to be, you know, very extremely religious either.
Right, yeah. And I mean, obviously, there's going to be some shared vocabulary within Catholicism that people might feel excluded from. What we really try to do is open that vocabulary up mm-hmm. and make sure that our reflections are inclusive and welcoming. And,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that's the whole thing is the communication.
Exactly.
It is. What is the process, the turnaround process? Say if you're a nonprofit
mm-hmm.
and you want volunteers from you guys. You fill out the application, then what happens?
Well, so our volunteer year, quote-unquote year, runs from September to June. When we were founded about 20 years ago, we were working with a lot of schools so that that timeline mm-hmm. made sense. For an applicant, usually people start applying in early spring, and then we do placement throughout the late spring and early summer. For a placement, they can apply anytime, mm-hmm. With the understanding that the beginning of the year is September. We don't make any guarantees that we can find a volunteer for the placement. And in fact, right now, as I had said, the sad reality is that there's a lot of need. We've got a waiting list right now of organizations that want an Ignatian volunteer. What I tell them is that it's not a first come first serve basis. Mm-hmm. It's not that, you know, if you apply after another organization that you're going to be the back of the line.
You're under the stack of papers here.
Right. It's, you know, if you're an organization that's looking for someone to come and do maintenance and handiwork, and we have someone who wants to do that come in, then you're going to get that person. It's really, we try to match the skills and the experience with the placement. My goal is, as I've been in this position for 2 years now, my goal is to really ramp up recruitment. It looks like we're set to have about 30 volunteers next September. When I came in, we had 18 volunteers.
Oh, very good.
So hopefully, as word of mouth continues and as our advertising ramps up.
Hopefully this.
Yes.
Or else I shouldn't be here.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you don't have to agree so quickly. Well, that's my next question. Volunteers, what's the range that you look for? Are there any more specifically in need than others, let's say? But first, the whole gamut of it.
How do you mean?
I mean, business people, you said, maintenance people, social workers, what have you.
Yeah, so when we say seasoned professionals, that's really everyone. Everyone, we look at over 50 is our starting point.
All right.
We've got a pretty broad community here in Baltimore. Our youngest volunteer is 53, and our oldest is 88, which is a couple different generations.
Makes an interesting softball team.
It does. It really does. Knock me off my game. In terms of skill sets, you know, we've got everything from people who come from banking and finance to education. People who've worked for the federal government, homemakers.
But is there, in your experience, in your 2 years there, could you give me, say, like 5 bullet points and the ones that you found are the most in need of the areas, I'd say? Or just a couple?
The area, well, in Baltimore, an area that's in need, and I think it's because it's an area that's supported by the city, is workforce development. Mm. So a lot of placements are asking for people to come in and help help with mock interviews, to review resumes, and sometimes people, you know, didn't get any resume writing skills,
right.
Or sometimes people have to explain a gap in employment because they were maybe in treatment or maybe they were in prison, and so we've got volunteers who are sitting with them helping to craft those resumes. The city has a pretty robust workforce development program, so a lot of organizations are asking for mm-hmm. our volunteers.
That seemed to be what I thought it would be, more work development and to tell people what to expect when they have the jobs and that, all that kind mm-hmm. of the whole thing, the whole gamut from A to Z there, in terms of from the first interview to the first day on the job and there on.
Right, exactly. I mean, a good volunteer in a position like that is not just sprucing up a resume and then letting someone walk out the door and mm-hmm. disappear. A good agency with whom we partner would be working with that person throughout the course of job seeking and finding employment and working on workplace communication skills, things like that.
Mm-hmm. We've talked about mainly the gist of your organization and mm-hmm. your history with it. And on most of, hopefully on all of the things that I do here, they're introduction. And so we hope to keep this going. And in terms of people that want to support you, how do you get your support? And
That's a great question, because we are a nonprofit.
It was in there somewhere. Yeah, geez.
So we are a nonprofit. I'd say we get our business model. We get our funding from a couple different sources. Our primary source of funding is that there is a fee for service that we charge our partners who have active volunteers. It costs us around $5,000 per volunteer to run the program. And what that cost is the cost of screening and placement, recruitment, and then the support program that we offer throughout the year, these retreats, these opportunities for volunteers to come together and do their peer development, peer sharing. And what I mean by that is that, you know, it's that, you know, that phenomenon where you went from being a senior in high school and you know, you knew your way around and you start college and you don't know nothing about nothing. You know, our volunteers are going through professional transitions in life. And so we provide an opportunity for them to sit around the table and say, you know, hey, I was vice president of my company. And now I'm walking in and there's a 22-year-old volunteer coordinator who's telling me what to do. And I don't know what to think about that. And so we provide a forum for them to support each other. And we make the pledge to our partners that by providing that forum, they're going to have better and more consistent volunteers through us. So it costs about $5,000 to support that program. What we do is we split that cost in half and we ask the community partner to share it with us. And so it costs $2,500 to receive a volunteer 2 days a week who comes in as almost a part-time staff member or a consultant. And that's a pretty good investment because it's a when I look at all total of our volunteers in the city, comparing it to the Corporation for Community Service, our volunteers saved our partners about $275,000 in personnel costs last year. So $2,500 is really not much. But that doesn't cover the whole program. We have a couple fundraisers throughout the year. We have an Orioles fundraiser coming up in September. We're selling tickets for $13 to go see the Orioles play Kansas City Royals on September 13th. The Orioles let us keep $5 of that. And we have a big award ceremony every spring, and we have a concert every December. And then we also do annual appeals. We're right now in the middle of a challenge grant. We have an anonymous donor who offered $100,000 if we can raise $100,000. So we're just actually wrapping up that challenge grant period.
Oh, very good. But I can imagine that when you were talking about retreats and such, that it's that people talk about when they first started out as a volunteer and where they are now, and they can exchange ideas with other volunteers about, well, I think this worked and this doesn't. Like I was talking to you beforehand, and I like to approach everything as a business plan. So you kind of have a plan, a developmental type of program, and it's a live thing, right? It emerges, and so you don't just keep it. So by the beginning of the year and the end of the year, there'd be nuances that would be completely different.
Yes.
And that's because of the volunteers.
It is. Yeah, at the beginning of the year this year, we did a prayer exercise where we assembled a bouquet of flowers, and each volunteer got two flowers and a little slip of paper that wrapped around the flower, and we had them write their intentions for the year. Their first intention was, where did they want to see their relationship with God go throughout the year? And then their second intention was, you know, where did they want, what did they want to get out of the year personally? So that was in September, and we're having our final monthly meeting beginning of June. And so that's when we're going to circle back and see how they did in those intentions. But it really is a growth process. 80% of our volunteers nationally stay for over 5 years. So
That's what my next point was going to be. Like I was telling you beforehand, I interviewed one of the directors of Meals on Wheels. And when you come in there to that, you're not sure what you're getting into. But then when you meet people, almost 100%.
Yeah,
want to keep on going and it's like that. And that's the thing too. Also, with retired people and all, it's something that they can still make a difference with, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, they've got plenty of skills to offer. And it's funny, you picture retirement, the stereotypical picture. I don't know why golf always comes up, but that's always the picture that comes up. But when I work with our volunteers, they are the busiest people I know. I mean, not only do they have amazing commitments to their family and to their kids and their grandkids, and in some cases their parents. But they also are, you know, they're involved in their churches. They have active social lives. They have other volunteer work outside of the Ignatian Volunteer Corps. But at the same time, it's a period of life where your community starts to shrink, where you stop going to work every day and your work family, your work community shrinks.
Right. And like you said, you know, you go from the big cheese down to, oh, He's a 20-year-old. He's telling me what to do here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a big transition. And so the Ignatian Volunteer Corps offers our volunteers, you know, a kind of a traveling community that they get to keep. And they get to then plug into these other communities where they're volunteering.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, I have a short story about how I founded the Ignatian Volunteer Corps.
Okay.
So when I came to Baltimore in 2001 to work in community organizing, I was based at St. Peter's Church down in the Hollins Market neighborhood. And, you know, like I said, I majored in political science. It was all very theoretical. And my job, starting in August, was to go knock on doors in Poppleton and Hollins Market.
And in West Baltimore.
In West Baltimore, and try and get people engaged in the neighborhood cleanup. And I was a total outsider. I didn't know anything about Baltimore, and it terrified me. And I sat there every day in August and looked at that point on my task list for the day, and it just... I procrastinated and procrastinated.
Like cold calling.
Yeah, yeah. And no one had taught me how to do that. And then September came, and this woman walked into my office, and I had an empty desk next to mine, and she introduced herself, and she was the Ignatian volunteer assigned to my placement, and she really became my professional mentor that year. She taught me how to go knock on people's doors, how to cold call, how to set up a neighborhood cleanup, and I was responsible for some after-school programs, too, and I knew nothing about children, so she taught me how to set up snacks for an after-school program, and I really couldn't have gotten through that year, and I don't think I would have be where I am in my career if it weren't for the wisdom and experience of an Ignatian volunteer.
And what was her name?
Ann Wagner.
Okay. Give her some pluses.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Anything else for right now?
I think that's it.
Well, good. It's a good start, I think. Why don't you give some contact info for people who want to volunteer and for people who want to utilize your...
Sure thing. So we are a national organization, and we're located in 18 regions around the United States, but I am the regional director for Baltimore. To learn more about the Ignatian Volunteer Corps, you can visit us on the web at www.ivcusa.org. And if you want to learn more about me and my region, just add /Baltimore to the end of that. Or give me a call at 410-752-4686.
Very good. Well, thanks for coming, Steve. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
It's
thank
been
you
great
for this.
Talking to you. I've been talking to Steve Everly, the regional director of the Ignatian Volunteer Corps here in Baltimore. I'm Dave Custy, your host for the Local Issues program here on Baltimore Internet Radio.